Deadwood Soundwave.
Cosmic Void. I'm Biggs.
I'm Xavion.
So today we're doing Nope from 2022, another newer film. When I watched it in the theater, I went with my kid and my wife, and we had a great time. I was a little let down because I love Get Out so much, and right. I loved Us, which I felt like the response on Us was a little bit muted compared to Get Out. And to me, it was like a misunderstood child. Like, I thought Us was brilliant.
It was really brilliant.
Yeah. And so I couldn't quite grab onto the theme, and I did a lot of work last night. It was my first rewatch of it. I immediately grabbed onto the theme this time, having already watched it and putting expectations aside, because I had really thought it was going to be a movie that was completely ground in social commentary. And there is some of that, but it's like in a different way.
Right.
Get Out is very much grounded in race. And I think Us, a little grounded in race, but mostly in class, I think.
Right. It was a lot of class, especially with Us. If you think about it, I mean, you had the underground and then people living above. But in that scenario, or in those situations, it wasn't just Black people, you know, or yes. Asians or Mexicans or white people. It was everybody. I understand your take
exactly
on
right.
it. You know?
And this one, which it took me a while to kind of put together what it was about the first time I watched it, and I don't think I totally grabbed onto it. Watching it this time, I immediately got it. This is about spectacle and exploitation, which is a very different theme, because he's specifically talking about how we consume movies, how we consume the news, TV, all of these things, and how it can be destructive. But then on top of it, he's talking about how people are exploited. Like,
well, and if you,
and that's where the race part comes in. Like,
right.
There's this erasure of Black people's contributions to the spectacle. An example I saw Jordan Peele give over and over again, and I think when you hear him say it, you can see the strings of it in this movie, is that Hollywood was built off of the Western in the early days. You know, that was the most popular genre probably through the 60s, I'm going to say.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mostly because, like, if you think about it, like Dukes of Hazzard, Quantum Leap, all of that, like those kind of...
At times,
there's still a little Western something there, you know?
It hasn't completely gone away, but like Hollywood was built on those. And you don't have Black cowboys. Occasionally you do. Like, there's a Sidney Poitier movie, Buck. I can't remember. It's like Buck
actually,
and something else.
Yeah, and they just came out that one on Netflix. It was a huge cast. I even think Idris Elba was in it, to be real honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I cannot think of this Western movie, though. It literally came out like 2 years ago, maybe even a year. My mom watched it. I never know, like, as a Black people, if we're being biased to being like, oh, it was a great movie because it has a bunch of Black people in it. From what I got out of it, my mom, it was a good movie. I didn't personally watch it, if I'm honest. She watched it. I've gotten to see skits, scenes, little side dishes. You know, it's interesting. But yeah, like Western stuff, like
For the most part, Black people not included. Even Native American people, when you look at that era, not included. I mean,
not included.
Italians
Nobody.
Play Native Americans and things like that. And so that's just not how the Old West was.
Do you ever think, like, even up to this era, were they playing it safe? You know, because really, if you really wanted to depict, break it down, you could have had everything in there, you know?
Do you want the blunt answer?
Oh, yeah, always.
It's white supremacy, man. Like, I mean, it just is. Like, it's, you get every rung of society is built around systematically, like, holding other races down and keeping the whites so that they have all of the opportunities. And Hollywood's no different in that way. We're only starting to see change, and we're so far from where we need to be still.
Was it Liza Minnelli? She was abused by her producers and stuff, and actually did blackface. Who was it? Maybe it wasn't Liza Minnelli.
Judy Garland?
It might have been Judy Garland.
I mean, I know that there's like a big story about her being forced to take diet pills from...
Yeah, it might have been Judy Garland.
When she worked with MGM when she was a kid.
When she worked with... Yes, because the producers and stuff were forcing her when she did the whole blackface cover, head to toe. It was awful. She looked like the Sambo character. It really shined down on what Hollywood really was and what they're capable of. I hate to say it like this. As much as things are illegal, we still do things that are illegal, but kept like swept under the rug or a secret.
Yeah, that's the backdoor dealings.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when
Look at like in sports too, like Colin Kaepernick so clearly had been blackballed by the NFL. And he still can't get a job. And it was ridiculous because him kneeling during the national anthem became a big story because he was doing it before that. It was just nobody really noticed.
Right.
And then when they did an interview with him and it blew up and became this big story, when he gets cut, he was a starting quarterback. And even if you just had him as a backup, he was better than just about any backup or probably all of the backups in the NFL. And he couldn't get a job. And he sued the NFL and he won. But as a result, you can tell they just have this agreement where it's even unspoken but understood.
But
between the owners.
And clearly we all see it. Like we all see that crap. And it's like, dude, what the hell? Like, but I've been doing this the whole time. Then when and honestly, I don't even know now if it's Hollywood. It's social media.
It's everywhere.
Is everywhere. Like, you're right, actually. Yeah. It is everywhere. And so it's nice that he's taking a part in this movie. What Hollywood can do. I mean, I'll be honest, y'all. I was watching it this morning. I didn't watch it last night. I've watched it so many times this week that I'm like, I'm caught up and I am ready for this podcast. Even in the beginning, I feel like I'm going to say something and it's going to be awful. But the way he broke down that monkey and it hears the balloon pop, and then you're watching and then the balloon pops again, it can be triggering.
So apparently, Jordan Peele wrote this during COVID. Us and Get Out, I believe he had written before he started production on Get Out. So those were things he had on a shelf. This one, he felt moved to write because he was at home like so many people. Probably not us, because I'm guessing you were in food service too. And so we were kind of...
I was, yeah.
So we were forced to go to work, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I did fine dining and we had just changed our menu around. So like we had like... It's crazy. We had like all new like fried chicken and shrimps and stuff like that. And so when it hit, it was definitely a little different. Food service.
Yeah.
And you know,
we don't have to get too much into that. Like, I feel your pain because I was in the same thing. So we didn't have the same experience that most people did during the pandemic. You can't like zoom in restaurants.
Yeah.
You
know? No, you really can't.
But most people were sitting at home watching the TV and we're seeing images of like refrigerated trucks with bodies because the morgue and the hospital are completely filled in New York and things like that that are super negative. And I mean, even me, when I was at home, I couldn't help but watch a lot of these images or read about it as obsessively. Like there's something about that car wreck where you can't turn away from. And so he felt the need to write this. And there's also the aspect of everybody wants to go outside, but is it safe to go outside?
Which that makes sense. During COVID, you had nothing to do. You were just sitting in your house and do whatever and live your best life. And so it's hard because his movies come out. He wrote them during COVID, but they come out.
Well, and he was making it during COVID as well. Like when you see the behind the scenes, everybody's wearing a mask. I did make note of this and I just wanted to mention it. So a previous co-host of mine, Zach Lakenbrook, who did Real Roulette with me and a bunch of podcasts, he works in Hollywood now. And he does stuff where he like lights people's eye lines and things like that. And he said, realistically, you can't social distance all the time, even though you're required to. Like the job literally requires you to break social distancing a lot of the time.
Right.
And so Jordan Peele is talking about this in the behind the scenes, but then later they're showing from a distance, like this scene where he's filming a couple of actors and there's like a crew member with a mask and another crew member with a mask, and they're filming this part, and then they wrap the scene and they celebrate, and two of the guys with masks like hug each other in the background, and they weren't trying to like note it, but I'm like, dude, you just broke
social
distance.
But that made such
like
a point. Yeah.
And they weren't trying to make the point. It wasn't even together when he was talking about it, but I noticed that because I was thinking about what Zach said, and I was like, oh man, what a nightmare. Movie theaters
so maybe
stayed open like, I think the May 2020, a bunch of them started reopening. I mean, I went to some movies after I got vaccinated, and it took a long time before I saw a packed house. I think first time I saw a packed house after COVID was Across the Spider-Verse, because I go to a lot of movies. That was the first time, man. Like, not a everybody single was movie
out there,
where I saw more than, like, maybe a tenth filled in a screening. So, I mean, it took a long time for people to get faith to even go to the movies. So it's just something I was thinking about, because it does seem like it's ground into the DNA of this. And of course, he's mixing all these things together. But we should start on the synopsis.
I'm ready.
The film begins with the quote, Nahum 3:6, "I will cast abominable filth at you, make you vile, and make you a spectacle. A single shoe is upright with a woman's body next to it. A bloody ape comes into frame with a fallen lampshade in front of it." Once you've seen this and you understand the theme of it, there's so much loaded into that little, like, 45 seconds or whatever it is at the beginning. Like, that quote, "I will throw filth at you and make you vile, make you a spectacle." Like,
dude, that was so powerful.
Yeah, and if you look at it from the prism of Hollywood, you are going to have all of these horrible things heaped onto you, and you will become worse.
Oh my gosh,
and then you will become
sense.
A star, right? Like, you'll be the spectacle. You'll be the thing up on the screen.
Yeah, and really, sometimes, like, you think spectacle in a good and bad way, and in this case, it was in a kind of in a bad way. Oh my gosh, you just opened my eyes to so many things. And trust me, watching the movie this morning, I was like, what? Yeah. There was some things that I was like, there's got to be something with this Hollywood thing.
And I heard him talk about it a lot. So
is the monkey referencing something? Because I don't want to bring up something and then make
Are you talking about race?
Yeah.
I wondered that when I first watched it. I don't think so.
I don't think he would go that far, but he makes
the fact that it's about exploitation. He might be loosely trying to, like, maybe in the back of
his mind. And in some way, this is going to sound awful when I say this. I related in the way we're doing too much showboating. So we threw this monkey on. He's doing all these things. He's doing these great. And then and we'll get into it later, folks. You'll hear it. But, like, you know, you find out the outcome. In that beginning scene, it is so powerful that you have to understand. And, like, don't skip the beginning. Don't sit there and, like, you can, you know, they do the Jordan Peele does a good way of, there's two things I've noticed. He does a good way of telling a story, and he has a good way of throwing characters in there that you don't realize are going to last this long. He does a good point of telling the story, but also that beginning scene, it gets you hooked.
And you've got that upright shoe, which is a bad miracle, as it's put later when you see Keith David go out at the beginning of the movie. You've got Ape there that's sitting there menacing, like, that's like the danger of the spectacle, I think, to me. And then right in front of him, you've got that lampshade that's on its side. And when you look at it, it looks just like the alien when it's tipped up, heading towards Daniel Kaluuya's character.
My God, I did not catch
there's
that.
There's like a visual in there too. I went back to look, was there the ape scene at the beginning when I was writing out the synopsis?
Right.
And so I rewatched it, and I'm like, oh wow, that's
he
like,
started off
that's
right.
Unmissable when you rewatch it.
Exactly. But. Well, there's a couple unmissable things. Once you get through that, the synopsis of, like, where they get to, there was a part, like, right when I left, I didn't realize something was going on. I was like, wait, was this in the movie the whole time? By the way, people, I watch things with subtitles. If I'm interested in the movie, I have to know what's going on. And so when I can read it, and best part is subtitles picks up on, like, distance things and all of that. I felt like the beginning, it starts a story.
Otis Haywood Sr. and his son OJ handle horses for films. While out on the ranch, debris falls from the sky. Otis is struck by a fallen nickel and dies en route to the hospital. So Keith David, out in the beginning, I was just like, Keith David's in this movie. And then he's gone. I'm like, damn. But I get why they do it, because he has to cast as Paul over the entire movie. And Keith David is one of the greatest character actors, period. Like, I love him. I loved him in The Thing. I think that's the first movie I really always go to in my mind when I think of Keith David. But just so many things.
He's a good voice actor, too.
Yeah, and just doing so many different styles of things. Yeah, you said voice actor. I mean, Ken Burns, I love his documentaries. And at some point, I want to say in the early 90s, Ken Burns grabs Keith David for narration, and he narrates everything now because he's just got this perfect voice.
It's, on one of my games, he actually... It's funny to hear Keith David on it, mostly because this game is so... gruesomely dirty. He'll say something in the game and you're like, oh my god, that's really Keith David saying that. He is a good narrator. I actually enjoy Keith David. And so it was funny that you're saying that because, all right, people, I know I said I watched this movie a lot. It did not dawn on me until today that that was Keith David.
So it's here's the thing. I'm gonna be real about this.
Yeah.
It always takes me a second to track it's Keith David in the last 10 years because he's so much older than the roles that mm-hmm. I think of him immediately.
Yeah.
So it's this old man. And then I'm like, oh yeah, that old man's Keith David, especially when you hear him talk. Like right. His voice is unmistakable.
Yeah, it really is. His voice is recognizable for 100%. And so, well, and then, like I said, I was leaving my house and I'm watching this, you know, I'm like creaking out the door like this, like, oh yeah, let me see what else I could get in before. And I'm like watching. And as I look, I'm like, oh my God, that's Keith David. I did not realize that the whole time through the movie. I've watched this movie multiple times and I'm like, oh my gosh, that is him. By the way, to take off the Keith David thing, you heard the screams in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I did not know that. It threw me off. I was like, is someone screaming in the background?
And you know what those screams are?
Yes.
They're people trapped inside of the thing.
The alien.
It doesn't kill them right away.
It doesn't. They are
much like Hollywood. You like yes. get sucked up into the system and you don't realize the wreckage that happens to you until afterwards. Like, yeah. I think that's the metaphor there.
And that's honestly was great. The minute I saw that, I was like, I have to get to the podcast. I have to get to the podcast. Alex, we have to talk. We have to talk. We have to talk. Because when I watched it, you hear it right off the bat. I'm like, damn, he really started it off. Nope was one of those movies that just is fast paced. It is so slow, but in such a fast pace, you're not picking up everything.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't even make noise. All those.
It makes some noises. Except for the screaming, which technically it's not is making. There's a lot of subtle noises.
It's very subtle. And then realizing that there's a cloud above them, and then like the stuff starts falling and it pierces Keith David.
Right. A terrible miracle, right?
I think
he says something like that. A bad miracle.
He says that.
Struck by a nickel through his eye. You're looking for the spectacle. You're hurt by the spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
Nickel. So I really thought about this a lot because they prominently show it in a plastic bag after they give him the bag with the nickel after he gets him to the hospital. And the nickel's covered with blood. And so the first thing that goes through my head is that Nickelodeons, so the first movies that were around where they would kind of, you know, flip the frames and show it to you, you would pay a nickel in the Nickelodeon and then watch it.
Oh.
So like, I think there's like a tie in there. But then the other thing is, who's on the nickel? Because he's shown very, very prominently. It's Thomas Jefferson, this guy who is credited with helping us get freedom in this country, but then also is a slave owner. So you've got this. It ties in with exploitation, right? I think there's a little metaphor for exploitation there, because like Thomas Jefferson is saying, yeah, we're going to be free of Great Britain. We're going to create this democracy. But then he's also
like
rich off of the slaves in his plantation and doing all sorts of heinous things to him.
Which that also is Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is 100% Hollywood.
And before people think like, well, maybe that's a bit of a reach. Like Jordan Peele, he's had some history talking about Thomas Jefferson. There's a Key and Peele sketch where they're doing ancestry. and they'll show white people and there's like this white lady's like, I'm related to Queen Elizabeth, and this black guy goes Thomas Jefferson. They keep showing all these different things and every black person is like Thomas Jefferson.
But he and like that's the best part is like Jordan Peele, you get to think about it, you get to get in his mind. Writers, directors, producers, all of that, they don't want you in their mind because it's too crazy. Jordan Peele, he does that with this movie. It was his first alien flick that I honestly wasn't going to watch it because I was like, I don't know. It's Jordan Peele in a way where I'm like, okay, I get it. But the more I watch his movies and the more you can think about it, even today, rewatching it a little bit before I left, in the first 10 minutes, I caught so much. And so hearing that, I mean, even now when we're talking, we're only on this, like the beginning synopsis. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Jordan Peele's got us talking.
I'm like floating through this one way quicker than last time. But honestly, there's so much. And I have such a deeper appreciation of this movie having rewatched it and kind of knowing where it was going. And I do want to say something else because you were talking about the alien. It is an alien. People that are making the case that like we don't even know it's an alien.
It's an alien.
It's an alien. And I say this because not just because it's called NOPE, which is an acronym for not a planet Earth.
Yeah.
Like we talked on the Get Out episode about how he likes duality in his titles. Like, nope. Like the characters are saying nope over and over
really,
again. But also not a planet Earth.
Not it's a planet
like,
Earth.
It's like both things. But then also there's nothing that's like that. And it's got these alien tropes. So like, don't tell me this is just some creature that's undiscovered. I know they don't explicitly say that it's an alien, but I heard Jordan Peele say like, what if an alien came to Earth, but it's not interested in making contact? It's just an eating machine. He's telling you right there, it's an alien.
It's an alien. And the best part is when he says that, he goes, but here's the thing. It's a bunch of different sea creatures put together, but he says, what if we could put it in the sky? I remember reading that. He goes, what if we throw it in the sky? Just because if you think about it, the ocean is one thing. When you're in the sky, he made it seem like you have no way out.
Yeah, we should talk about this. So it looks like a flying saucer for most of the movie.
Yes.
It like transforms later. It's akin to a jellyfish. Like they had this jellyfish, lady who's a biologist.
Starfish, cuttlefish. It's a mix of five different creatures.
Yes. So it is like a sea thing and it floats by almost having sails like a ship.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, and this is the weirdest one, but it so makes sense with the theme. They were also looking at Marilyn Monroe's skirt in The 7 Year Itch. So like one of the most iconic scenes where she's at the vent and she's holding down her dress and it's blowing up. Like if you think about the way that it like unfurls around the edges, it's like that skirt. So once again, it's going back into the spectacle talking about Hollywood. So it's like hidden in the design.
So he hit really hard on, I was trying to figure out, I didn't know if this was going to be a race thing, but this sounds like it's more, it sound like a race thing.
The way he put
Hollywood.
It is like every movie he makes is not going to be about race. And like, cause people kept asking him, are they trying to put you in a box? You know, before this movie, and are you worried that like people only want to hear you talk about race? And he says, I'm not interested in just talking about race, but he says, anytime I make a movie, race has to be a factor because I have people of color in my movie and it's always going to be there. And it's true, whether it's spoken or unspoken, it always will be a factor. So it makes me think of as like Night of the Living Dead. When George Romero does that, he casts a black man in it. And there's all this imagery that I believe is talking about the civil rights era at that moment. Part of it is because the actors are bringing it in, I think, and he lets the dialogue loose. But just by having this black man at the center of frame in the 60s, it is making a statement whether you want it to or not.
And Jordan Peele is definitely making statements. I think that's the point we should really see. I really didn't get race from this. I understood it. That's why I was like,
yeah, it's there, but it's very much in the background.
Yeah, and then like, I didn't know where he was going with the whole, I apologize, people, just more of like the race thing. I didn't know if he was doing like a monkey to be like.
Right. And I don't think he was, but
I don't think he was either, but I think he let it know.
It might
that,
be in
like,
his subconscious.
Hollywood
too.
Movies, actors, all that, they could be exploited. You know what I mean? And so with this monkey, I do think
we see it with Jupe, right? Like when we get to the Jupe character, he's clearly been exploited throughout his life.
He
with Hollywood,
obviously has. So. And I think that the monkey, that beginning scene, like I said, everybody, it is powerful, mostly because you're right, the shoe standing up. I even caught that shoe standing up. I'm like, interesting.
And it reappears twice.
It does. Yeah. And it's just straight up. It doesn't fall. It doesn't move. He didn't make it to a point where he had to bring it to a scene. It's kind of like the deer in Get Out.
Absolutely. It's this thing that like stands out and it symbolizes something.
But really you don't realize that. And some people that haven't been through those kind of things won't understand it. But
that's also where this show lives, right?
Yeah.
It's like breaking that down for people who aren't maybe thinking about it or want it expanded on. So
I felt bad because, well, and if you think about it, movies with animals, it can depend on what it is. You know
what
I mean?
It's still exploitation.
Exactly.
Like even this ranch is exploiting the animals.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, Friends had the monkey Marcel on it. And
a crazy thing that was, dude.
What an insane thing that was. Super insane. And really the Marcel character had nothing to do with anything but be a monkey on the show. But what I got out of it is I think they had to get rid of it. There was so much behind it. I can't really talk
on it. You're kind of playing with a time bomb when you bring out another primate, too. It doesn't enter into an agreement like we talk about before. It just is.
Like, it just is. And so when you see these movies with animals, I think he did a really good thing of being like, okay, so why is there like this monkey on this show? This thing should be out in its own habitat, doing its own thing, not sitting here with a freaking birthday hat on playing for these actors. And yeah. So I think that's where...
That's a real exploitation thing too. You see the birthday hat on it. Like there's no way that it's going to choose to put on a hat.
I think he had a good point of when the balloon pops, we'll get into that, but when it does its thing and snaps and does all of that, I'm like, right, he says it in the movie, but you can't sit here and train a beast. I hate saying it like that, you know.
No, it's true. Later, OJ and his sister M are on the set of a commercial. M gives a safety talk while laying out the history of their family. She says they're descended from the black jockey that rode the horse in the first movie ever made. The crew moves in too close to the horse and it kicks back after seeing its reflection. They are fired. So first off, that thing that she says about the black jockey, Jordan Peele, and this is one of those things that makes me laugh, like we talked about in Get Out. Like he says, I think. And it's like, dude, you know, though, like
you know what you were doing there. Yeah,
but when he says, like, I think that she might be telling the truth, but she might just be lying in that moment to get attention.
He knows what he's doing. And, like, M is one of my favorites.
And that jockey, important to note in history, we know the name of the guy who made the film.
Yeah.
We know the name of the horse.
Yeah.
We do not know the name of the jockey. It's completely lost. And this ties in with that erasure of black people from history.
Right.
Like, it is a monumental moment. It's held up. I've seen that clip so many times before this movie whenever I watch stuff that's on the history of cinema. And, like, we don't know the name of that jockey. Like, that's outrageous.
Yeah.
And people have tried now, but it's gone because it's just forgotten to time because nobody cared enough to write it down or intentionally didn't want it written down.
Well, and until it's...
And there was jockeys everywhere.
There was, but until it's brought to light again, it's going to be history. And that's what sucks about history is it's a past. And so when it's left back there, no one's going to remember it until someone actually remembers and then goes, this happened, you know?
And you know what it reminds me of? There was this black heavyweight, Jack Johnson. He was the first black heavyweight to capture the title, okay? Mm-hmm. And when he captures the title, like, he had fought for years and beaten everybody, but had never gotten a chance to fight for the heavyweight because they didn't want to give a black person a shot at the title, because at that point it was considered the strongest man on earth, and like a lot of society were like, they're animals, they're not people, that kind of thing, so don't give them the shot at this. They finally give him the shot and he destroys the other guy and he wins by decision. But right before the fight's over, somebody walks over to the camera that's filming it and rips the canister out, so the film is absolutely exposed. And we're robbed of that moment of Jack Johnson becoming heavyweight champion because, once again, we're erasing him from history. And that's not in this movie, but it's in line with what this movie is.
Yeah.
I'll go further with that. I'm related to one of the great white hopes who, like, fought Jack Johnson. This guy named John L. Sullivan. You've probably seen this picture. He's this boxer, and it's this black and white photo. And he's got a mustache, and he's got two arms that are kind of up.
I feel like raised. I might know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's like a meme now, and they'll always say something like, you mean sissy girly thing or something. Like, they'll say something.
I know what you're talking about now.
That dude is either my great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-uncle. We don't know. But the point is, there is film of him winning. Mm-hmm. Like, even way back then, and like the late 1800s, but there's no film on Jack Johnson winning it because he was black and they were like, nope, we don't want to remember this.
And if you think about it back then, so I told you before, like, we're getting into a lot of the black movies. So Blackening, we've done Get Out. Didn't we just do? No, never mind. That was Russell Rice, baby.
we're doing this one.
Yeah, we're doing this and this one. Yeah. Again, the Hollywood, the movie screens and everything else, we're getting more of an opportunity. So I will be honest, when this movie did come out, we've kind of gotten to that aspect. And so when Nope came out, I think it brought a more bigger aspect out and was like, oh, shoot, we really weren't wrong. We really did see these things. And so when you see it, I'm sorry, America back then was not the greatest. And it's hard because nowadays it's like, well, why do black people have it so bad? And I'm like, it's 2023.
If you start a foot race in a pit, you have to climb out of that pit. And when we make it out, behind.
Yeah. And then when we make it out of that pit, the hard thing is One of my actual friends said this. She goes, why do white people have it so hard right now? And I'm like, sorry, girl. Like, I love you, but like, I don't want to hear this BS because you have it so hard. Maybe it is nice to see somebody go through a struggle here and there.
Well, and let's be real, too. Everybody has it hard right now with inflation and all this stuff, mm-hmm. but people have it worse. And it's not white people that have it worse. It's just not. That's just a bad faith argument to say that we're lagging behind.
Yeah. And like, I'm like, well, okay, come on now. There's certain foundations. Don't get me wrong. Black people, we have our certain ways and histories as well. But like these movies, like Get Out, I was mad because I was mad at white people. Because it made it
should be
and honestly, because I've heard and seen a lot of these comments, a lot of these situations, he does a really good job at that. And same with pulling it out of Hollywood. I mean, again, like we were saying, I want to say it was Judy Garland. We wouldn't even do Judy Garland, homegirl from The Shining. She went through
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall. Good Lord. She went through some stuff. And did you ever see it on another movie? Absolutely not. Because I felt like back then, Hollywood, again, exploits. It pulls out. It brings all these things.
Yep, we got what we wanted from you. See you later.
Bye.
We have nothing else to offer.
They almost basically treated these people as prostitutes, sex workers. It's hard because it's like, once I'm done with you, I'm done. They abused and used and kept it pushing. And so like The Shining, she says it in there. She goes, the producer or whoever.
Kubrick, the director.
He was on her and on her and on her.
Yep.
So I will say this. I don't even think Jordan Peele was trying to bring a point to where it was a race thing. He does for Hollywood.
I think very minorly. More about exploitation.
Exactly.
And the spectacle in general.
Yeah. Like,
OJ is trying to back everybody off of the horse, but they're so used to this exploitation. They think about it like a prop, not a sentient thing. And it's starting to flip out. And then that person goes to, I don't even know what he's doing, getting light or something, but
it didn't make any sense.
Reflection back at it.
Yeah, and the horse kind of freaks.
It sees that it's being seen up front and it freaks out, which is going to be foreshadowing for how the creature reacts later in the movie.
Right.
OJ sells his horse to a former child actor named Jupe, who has a Western theme park based off of a movie he was in during the mid-90s. MC's a Mad Magazine cover that features a send-off of an incident from a sitcom Jupe was in. He shows her a room that acts as a museum dedicated to the incident where an ape brutalized the cast and crew. He relates the story by talking about a Saturday Night Live sketch that skewered it. So there's a lot to unpack in this scene. The first thing I want to do is something very obscure that a lot of people don't know, but Jordan Peele, when he was on Mad TV,
that's right,
had an opportunity to get onto Saturday Night Live. They offered him a role on the show so that they could have him playing Obama. This was in 2008 when he was a candidate. Fox would not let him out of the contract. And then, by the way, canceled the show very quickly afterwards.
Mad TV.
So Jordan Peele has this opportunity to go on the biggest sketch show of all time.
And Fox isn't letting him.
And they're not letting him, but they don't even care about the show that they're retaining him for. They just don't want to help out. So it's like, once again, it was like he has to have felt on some level that Hollywood was exploiting him and like using him up, and they didn't even care. It was just for some power struggle.
Which is probably why you threw this in this movie.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have the Mad Magazine cover right there.
Oh my gosh.
He's talking about Chris Kattan on Saturday Night Live playing the... Because Chris Kattan did this Mr. Peepers character that was like
an apple. I used to love Mad TV. I used to read the magazines. And so, oh my gosh, I'm going to go home and watch this again and again and again. Because I did not know there was a Mad TV thing in there. I'm getting really excited.
Yeah, because the whole thing with the ape comes up because M's looking at the Mad Magazine cover.
Gosh, I'm sorry.
And by the way, Jordan Peele is like still pissed about Mad TV. I've heard him talk about it once or twice. And
because Mad TV was still really good. They had great characters. They had people that were memorable. And then it did just go from it was there. And then I remember being a kid and, you know, we didn't have big social media. There was no, oh my God, are we going to find out when it's going to come out next? No, a show just got canceled. It was canceled.
Yeah,
and you did not really hear about it until it was like on the news or something.
And furthermore, Peele didn't like the show because he felt like they were trying to be edgier than Saturday Night Live.
They were.
So that they could stand out somehow. And he felt like it encouraged this thing with the cast and writers to be really mean in a lot of their comedy. And he genuinely did not like the vibe of it.
Really mean. And then like, and they tried to do a racial thing where it was poorly put out there because it was like, okay, I see what you're doing. And like SNL does good at it, but they're people, the comedians and stuff on there, they all work together. They all come up with these skits. The two dudes, the news anchors, the black and the white guy, they ended up
Michael Che and I think Colin Jost.
Yes, yeah. They did a good job at writing their own material.
Nothing's funnier to me when Michael Che says a joke that's over the line.
Oh, and yeah.
Just watching his reaction to the audience. It's so good. It's just the flat look he gives.
And that's what I was going to say is there was a point where, so he ends up writing his own stuff out, and then on the prompter it's reading through, and then the white guy Jost, he is like reading it, and everything he is saying, people didn't understand that other guy, the black guy, is the guy that wrote this. He's the one that homeboy is reading the prompter from. And so as the guy's saying this, I went on and I started watching. I'm like, oh my gosh. And you know, it's SNL, so I have to go and figure it out.
Colin Jost too is conservative
yeah.
on top of it. Like I just thought it was a shtick he did because he was up against Michael Che. And then I found out, no, he's pretty conservative.
He's really like that. But the real thing is like when reading all those things out, people were mad. And I was like, well, hold on. That's another thing that I see, and not just SNL, Hollywood and all that doing. They allow social media to go in and say, oh my God, it's all these bad things, when really they know the freaking answer. It was Michael Che who wrote these things, you know, not him. And he's not sitting here saying that, but people cannot grasp that fact that.
It's so amazing to me, that aspect of it. That does play into like, we've got this spectacle, and that's one of those painful things you have to go through sometimes. I was specifically talking about how nobody co-opts like Gen Z, right?
Yeah.
And they had this sketch about Gen Z where they're saying all of this stuff that's like clearly black stuff, and people were mad when they were watching it. And it came out, that sketch was written by Michael Che. He was making commentary on how Gen Z does this.
This is written by a black guy.
And people just look past the satire of it because they want to be upset, and they're not even thinking, maybe this is making a point. And that's a painful thing you can have with
and
the
unfortunately,
spectacle, too,
these are my white friends
involved in it.
Yeah.
You know?
And these are my white friends trying to be an alliance. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But like, I'm laughing. Let me laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like,
don't tell me how to
laugh.
Yeah,
don't tell me how to laugh. Like,
the other thing that should be mentioned, Jupe, he has gone through the ringer. Like, he is the literal example of being exploited by Hollywood. He's apparently the quote-unquote Asian kid in this movie, and they refer to it once or twice.
They
and
did.
Then he's on this thing where, like, this ape attacks, and he's making money off of that. He's so clearly traumatized, but he can't even talk about the incident. He has to relate a Saturday Night Live sketch just to even get it out.
He did, and it was not...
No, and I think it's because he needs that distance, right? Like, it's so painful. He has to remove himself from it a little bit. The electricity quits working at the ranch and a horse goes running off. OJ sees a UFO that he believes caused his father's death after it drops debris. Em and OJ decide to get it filmed so that they can have enough money to save the ranch. They go to an electronics store where a clerk named Angel offers to set up the cameras after telling them they won't be able to figure it out. They set up a giant plastic horse with flags and place it in the pen.
I already told you, like, I'm a creature film guy. I'm like, creatures eating people. I'm like, that's kind of entertaining. You know what I mean? And so I was expecting more. But throughout the movie, you are seeing that. As that thing sounds like it's whistling.
Yeah.
Those are screams.
Yeah, they
and
are.
And it's so scary. The part that gets me is the truck part where in the distance, you know, he sees the lights and it cuts out and then it comes back to, and then you hear the screaming again. Every time I hear screaming, I know that thing is eating.
Yep. That's exactly what it's doing.
Super.
And that's
freaky.
Why it's raining all the debris down is because it's getting rid of the inorganic material.
Yeah. That's stuff that doesn't need, which is why the dad got hit. And then in that beginning scene just this morning, when I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, this thing is eating above them. And we don't even know that. We didn't even realize that. That's what I'm saying. Subtitles are great.
Linking that scene to this scene, I want to bring up something, and I don't know. Nobody seems to have a handle on it when I looked it up, but this is my theory. This key that's stuck into the horse, right? I think that key, because it's prominently placed, shown sticking out of the horse, I think that Jordan Peele is trying to say the key to dealing with this animal is how the horse reacts. Right? Like the horse runs from it, doesn't look at it, just wants to run from it, like right. get away from it. Right.
Right.
And then later when OJ finds the key, you know, with all the debris, like they show the key, like
show up. It. They show
and
it
I think the,
as it
that's
is.
That's a key to him to understanding that like this caused his father's death. Right.
Absolutely. Like,
I think, I don't know, but
I could see that the key might have more of a metaphor, mostly because now if you think about it, he does a good job at like zooming in on things that you find confusing. But really, I think Jordan Peele is bringing it to your face to face and saying, this is what this is. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
And so when you zoom in on the key, I actually could see that.
That's why I focus on the nickel so much too, because the key and the nickel both have scenes where he's just focused on that. It's not a necessary thing to do
right.
unless there's a point to it.
Exactly. I didn't realize that when he does zoom in on some things, you're to figure that out.
Yeah.
Again,
holding your hand.
He's
he
not.
Never holds your
the
hand.
Deer,
in these
the
movies.
Deer and Get Out. Again. I didn't realize that was something until we talked about it on this podcast, which I love doing this because I'm not in my own head about these movies. And then it goes to the back of my mind.
The scissors and us, like there's so many things with like the tethered and trying to break free and
okay.
also being menacing, right?
Makes
like
sense.
Whenever he focuses on these objects.
Yeah. And so the key
has some power.
That makes sense. So I have no idea.
And then of course they meet Angel, who I just love
his
introduction
Angel.
Because he's just so annoyed with them.
He
you
is.
You know what I mean? He's like that crappy tech guy who just like
and
wants
he,
to let you know you're
yeah.
not good enough.
And he works there and you can tell he's over it. He's done dealing with dumb people. He's like, hey, do you, and it's funny because he goes, do you want me to come help you set this up? And they're like, oh no, we can do it. We just what, we got a bunch of cameras. And he's like, no.
Like, yeah, he gives a look and then OJ's like, how difficult is the setup? And he's like, you're not going to be able to
do it. You know what's
it.
Funny? I think, yeah, you're not going to be able to hang her. And he says it just like that. I think it was funny because I'll be honest, I actually met somebody and not met them, but they were working their work at Winco. And my mom has a weird way of like, I'll read it. Like if someone's kind of being a certain way towards their whatever, I'll pick up on that. The way she was responding to things, I thought my mom would react in a certain way and she didn't. And I was like, interesting. So then when we got out to the car, I like kind of blame people, but really I'm like, it wasn't anybody. But I'm like, man, that lady kind of had an attitude, you know? And she's like, oh, nah, she's just working. She looked like she was kind of over it. And that right there, when she said that and then seeing that movie, it really looked at me and I'm like, maybe he was over his job. He enjoys it. He loves it. Is he generally happy? And so when you like look at that, I was for real like, ah, oh, Jordan, you did good. Because really, it turns into, let me come help you. And
yeah.
That's when I was saying he has a really good way of throwing a character in there that you're not even expecting to be in there.
You're exactly right, because Jordan Peele, when he was trying to cast a movie, he just had one line for people to deliver, and it was supposed to be delivered enthusiastically. The aside said it was for somebody who works in an electronics store, and they didn't get the script. They just get this one thing. So that actor reads it, and he's thinking, it's Jordan Peele. He usually does grounded stuff. So he starts to think about all the people that he knew in an electronics store, and he's like, they're super annoyed all the time. So he puts that in, and Jordan Peele loved it so much and thought like it was so funny the way that he delivered it. He completely rewrote that guy's part and like changed things in the script.
Interesting.
Because of that reading. He was just like, yeah, this actually needs to be in the
movie. But if you think about it, we see that nowadays. And like I said, that lady at Winco, she was just doing her job. You know, it's a struggle. And
yeah.
People are not happy right now. But the thing is seeing him react that way, that's funny that the whole movie was like that. And then the fact that they went and changed a part, he acted how I would assume someone would act. As society as it is now, I could never work at like a GameStop, an electronics store. No, because there's too many things and too many Kevins and Karens and like too many questions to where I can't make it more explainable than I can explain it to you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where he was like, so do y'all want me to come set up? No. He still some cameras up. And he's like, I mean, do you want to take the actual video? You know, like.
Yeah. M tries to get the cinematographer from the commercial they were fired from, Antlers Holst, to record it. She tells him there's something out there. It's an impossible shot. To which he says, impossible. Like, immediately. Yeah. He then says, it's a dream you'll never wake up from. I love that dude's voice, dude. Yeah. It's just like so intense. So, and he's sitting there watching some crazy, like, I don't know, undersea video that he filmed.
Yeah, you know? It was weird.
Yeah, he's a weird
dude. We're talking about Angel, right?
No, we're talking about the cinematographer.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. I actually really enjoy him, though.
No, he's great.
He is.
Great, but he's in this movie.
Weird.
He's just weird.
He's just weird.
Angel comes over the next day and points out that there's a cloud in the sky that hasn't moved or changed for a day and a half. That's because he's hacking into
He has been watching them the whole time.
Yeah, and there's somebody else from the store who's watching it and wants to know about it too, because they're watching this spectacle and, like, the bugs in the way of the camera.
She's like, what are you watching? He's like, I'm just watching this cloud that hasn't moved in 2 days, you know?
The alien comes over. They can't get a shot of it because the camera goes down. The other camera kicks in, but there's a bug on the lens, so they can't see that. A praying mantis.
Which
I love when Kiki yells at it. Yeah. Like, you better be praying.
You better be praying. And she's yelling at it, like, as if the thing is going to really jump down and listen to her. No.
Anyways, Angel theorizes it could be a creature and not a ship.
It's scary. It's really freaking scary, because when you say no, you really have no way around this. This thing could really, I mean, if it really wanted to, it could suck them through a house. It didn't, but...
Because it would hurt it, you know, like we see that would, later with the truck.
It would damage itself.
I think it's afraid to suck up the truck because it would hurt itself.
Exactly, because we learned that at the end. First of all, M is one of my favorites. Any Kiki Palmer movie with her in it, I'm kind of like, I'm down for this. But her character, so good. Angel, so good. All these characters were really good. You know what I mean? The actor, the main protagonist.
Daniel Kaluuya?
Yeah. His, like, shut-offness that, like, just kind of, like, he doesn't give a shit.
Being from Montana, I've known a lot of dudes like that. Don't hang out with them, but have known them on the periphery because they're like ranch dudes a lot of the time, or they're like around the farm, or they just like they relate to animals better than they relate to people.
He that character, but his, all his characters are always good with that.
And it's something that's interesting when you think about the siblings in this, is that she has the charisma that the father apparently had. And he has the know-how that the father has. And, like, together they could make the ranch work. But they're not really working together, though they are. They're not.
Yeah, and she doesn't want
to
be there.
She's trying to, like, promote all her side stuff.
Yeah, she wants to make this ranch, you know, an amusement park. And he's like,
trying to do the talking. And it does not work because he's not personable. Yeah, it's painful to watch. Jupe has a flashback to an incident with an ape. It chases and beats down several people. It spots Jupe under the table and fist bumps him before being shot to death. Jupe snaps out of the flashback and hosts a show where we find out that he's been feeding horses to the UFO. It flies over, ignores the horse, and sucks all the people up into it. So first off, the ape thing. I think that Jupe survives for two reasons. I think one is he's focused on that shoe that's standing upright, which, by the way, is in his little hidden museum that he shows M, you know, all of that stuff. Like, he has a shoe standing upright in that thing. It's clearly a thing that he focused on. But I also think the reason why he survives that ape is because he's so focused on the spectacle of that he's not looking it in the eye. And then it goes to the fist bump, which he said in the first scene with Jupe that they invented the exploding fist bump on that show.
Yeah. I'm doing an eye roll movement right now, y'all, because that was laughable. You're like, what?
But you see the ape go to fist bump him, and it cuts. Like blood running down on its hand, and then it gets shot. But I think the other reason why the ape doesn't go to attack him is I think Jupe is being exploited, like the ape is being exploited.
Do you feel like the balloon, because the balloon popped the first time, doesn't that, and it snaps.
Yeah.
And when it popped again, it comes back too.
I think part of it is it's just like kind of a metaphor for.
I thought it was like, I mean, it's like a loud noise. You know, like,
I think it's also a metaphor for like, I exploded, like I had enough kind of thing. That's my theory.
Next movie might be Enough. So we might. Yeah. Enough. I've had enough. Which actually that might be something I would actually look forward to if he did something called Enough and it had to do with some stuff like that. The popping of balloons, there's something there. I don't know what it is. It pops. I mean, he killed that guy. It's also
foreshadowing to how the creature's going to die, right? Right.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, Alan. Okay, Biggs. You're on your, you know,
on this all okay. night, dude.
What did you just do to me? I'm so confused right now. That's so good. Oh my gosh. So like we knew how I was gonna die before we even knew how I was gonna die.
Yeah, he's giving you a little hint.
Oh Biggs, he just oh my gosh.
The other thing too is so when we see the UFO, they have the horse in this see-through box. And
yes.
So like we have the spectacle of the horse, but the horse isn't going to escape it and it isn't looking up at the creature. So the creature doesn't care about the horse, mm-hmm. cares about the people watching it. He has this lady there who got attacked by the chimp. And this I find interesting because this is another thing to unpack that the internet helped me with this one. Earlier in the movie, they talk about how they want to get that $1 million shot. And they talk about how they want to get the footage for Oprah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in real life, around 97, there was this lady who had this ape in her home and she would dress it up and sleep with
yes.
it, and it mauled her and took the bottom half of her face, kind of like that lady looked. And she went on to Oprah and she was wearing like a sheer veil, just like that lady was in that too.
That just dawned on me. I forgot about that lady. Yeah. And here's the thing is, this is where I was going back to, why are we putting these exotic animals in movies and stuff? Like I can see a dog, like, okay, Air Bud, stuff like that. But like Monkey Trouble, that was a good movie back then. But like, we're putting these animals that we have no idea about. I mean, we've learned that. I mean, Carol Baskin.
Clint Eastwood did these movies. I think it was Any Which Way But Loose.
Yes.
And something, I can't remember what the sequel is called, but he's driving around with an orangutan. And if you read up on what they did to that orangutan to make it act, it was cruel. Like, there's it's no awful. Way around
I mean,
it.
The fly, they have a baboon. I always thought, like, baboons were aggressive monkeys. You know, like, these aren't something you would put into a movie. Now, like, a chimpanzee or something, I could see that.
And chimpanzees are famous for, like ripping your face off, exactly. biting you, like, taking yeah. your arm off and beating you to death.
Yeah,
with
and
it.
So like, you think about it, I mean, a baboon versus a chimpanzee, I don't hear much about baboons, but you don't see a baboon in movies like no. that. Where in The Fly, there was a full-ass baboon. And you're just like, okay, interesting. Why go with that? What I will say is like, for real Hollywood, wait, we got to stop putting these exotic animals into these things. Just because this animal is behind a cage or a bar or whatever else. And I think that's also what he was putting in there.
And by the way, if anybody thinks Jordan Peele is being hypocritical by having an ape in his movie, I saw the behind the scenes. It's this dude doing
it's a
an
CGI.
Ape performance. Yeah,
it's
and then,
very CGI.
Then they map an ape onto him. So he's not doing that.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that.
But
because
probably has a horse in the movie.
Yeah, there was a couple animals in there. Yeah, yeah. No animals were harmed in the filming of that movie. Right. I don't know. But that's where I was going with it, is the siege. The monkey was not even a monkey in that movie. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I was like, that was definitely CGI. That was definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
But it does go back to stop putting these freaking exotic animals in these movies just to make a quick buck.
Even when you think about the horse, it's this thing that we associate with freedom. Like, you can go out and ride and be free with the wind mm-hmm. in your hair, whatever, but you're like on top of this animal that you've dominated into doing what into you wanted to do. Like, you right. literally have to break a horse's spirit to be able to ride it. Ties in with that nickel with Thomas
it
Jefferson
does.
And all the exploitation, right?
Right.
OJ attends the show late and sees the creature. It chases him underneath the bleachers. He calls M and tells her that it's a predator that's territorial. The phone cuts out and the creature rains blood and debris on their house. OJ's pickup dies as he races back and it hovers over the vehicle. It drops a plastic horse into the windshield right where OJ's father died. Eventually it moves. And OJ, M, and Angel escape the ranch. And they do that thing where he was in Angel's van. It's playing that gosh. I wear my sunglasses at night, yeah. And then it like slows down because that, the power goes out. And that it's part just, like, is doing it so slow.
So yeah, it's so slow. And you guys will be like sitting there like, okay, just run to the car. No, you can't. You can't run to the car. You can't do all these things. This thing is so quick. This thing moves. Not like lightning, but it moves fast enough that if he were to move in a certain way, that thing's going to catch him. So like you're watching and that song comes on and you're just like,
I wear my sunglasses
so good. So this thing can cut out the power. It eats and then lets it all out right there and then, you know.
Oh, dude. And it like rains that house with, yeah, blood, with blood and the, all the stuff.
Because he just ate all these bleachers. People. Yeah. And the hard thing is the way you're looking at this thing, it looks like a spaceship. When you're going through it, the way Jordan Peele, and I will say this, the reason I love this movie is because it actually did get me to go and look at like what the monster was, what it does, how is it. Well, he says it in there. He goes, I wanted people to realize what it was like to be feeling like you're being ate by stomach acid. This is how it's going down. And so how he's explaining it, I was like, oh my God, so scary.
There's like another piece of this too. And there's like this biblical line that runs through it. And I don't think he was doing it so heavy handed, but you have the biblical quote from the Old Testament at the beginning. You have a character named Angel who later on is covered with barbed wire as if like by thorns or something like that. Yeah. And then you have people that are, and this ties in with the exploitation narrative. You have people who are elevated as if they're going up to heaven. But then when they're up there, they're chewed up and spit out.
Yeah. Right? And it is. Yeah.
Like, oh, this is what I wanted. Oh, I'm a rising star. Yeah. And then like, see you later. We're done. Well,
and he says it perfect. I don't know if we're on that scene yet. No, actually, probably like I'm going to say something that I shouldn't.
Antler sees a news report and decides to help them film it with a hand crank camera. They set up and lay out tube men so they know the location of the creature without looking at it. OJ thinks it won't mess with flags anymore since a plastic horse had a string on them and it injured the beast. He names the creature Jean Jacket after a horse that Em was supposed to train until their father changed his mind.
Right. I didn't realize the creature was going to be Jean Jacket. The creature is Jean Jacket. That's what I read.
I didn't catch that in the movie for some reason. I didn't either. It. And then I was watching these like special features and every other sentence are like, well, with Jean Jacket, well, Jean Jacket was doing this. Well, we wanted to design Jean Jacket. Yeah. And I was like, what?
Who's Jean Jacket? And, the horse?
And then like, I realized no. Like, oh, they named it. And I went back and watched this thing. I'm like, but okay, I get it.
The thing is, so one thing about this movie is it's not explanatory in a way that everything is like in your face. And so you don't even realize its name, Jean Jacket, until the end. And I'm like, why did they name it? Until that. The big little cut part where it looks like an old school movie and it's like Jean Jacket. I was like, oh my gosh, that makes sense.
And also because M wanted to train horses and the father suddenly decides not to, right?
Yep, because she had Jean Jacket as a kid.
And she's like flaking out all the time. And so this is her like taking her place of what she took her, she should have done.
Yeah, she took her power responsibility. Back. Yeah.
Right, because she breaks Jean Jacket. She literally breaks it.
She does, because really, originally, Jean Jacket was hers, and the brother got to train Jean Jacket. He got to break Jean Jacket.
Right, for the Scorpion King. Remembered the wrong movie, but it was the Scorpion King. He's wearing that Scorpion King hoodie.
And she goes, and who wrote Jean Jacket? And then it was like this whole thing. So, no, that she did a really good job at that.
Another thing I wanted to mention was they have that thing where Antler, where they're talking about entering an agreement with the Predator. And
that's
he's saying,
what I was going to say.
Talk to Siegfried and Roy about that. So I want to mention, I was in Vegas the night that whichever one of them got attacked by the tiger. I didn't see it, but I was in Vegas and everybody around Vegas was super depressed. And I wasn't even at the casino where it happened. They were like, this is really going to hurt tourism. And when I think back on it, that is so messed up because like, they were not so much upset that he got hurt, but that it was going to hurt that spectacle and cost their jobs.
Absolutely.
That ties right in with what this is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And I have a personal connection to this. That's like, I never contextualized it that way until I started to think about this last night. That's nuts.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Stop putting these animals in like, I'm sorry. A tiger is not meant to go on stage and perform. I'm sorry. I don't agree with that.
And once again, they did the thing. There's tons of video of them like living with their tigers and
living
and
with their tigers. We have learned from Carol Baskin and what's his name? I said her name earlier. We have learned. You cannot, by the way, great. I would love to pick up on that one. But we've learned, gotta stop taking these wild animals. I've watched a lot of social media. I watch YouTube like crazy. And there's these people who they're like, oh yeah, we have these animals. They're in cages. This is the reason why. I understand that. I understand. But let that animal be an animal. Stop exploiting it to the fact that like you want to go in there and cuddle and love on it. I think that is so wrong. I get it. You raise it from this thing. You did this thing. You're helping this, whatever.
But you're exploiting it.
Absolutely. I don't agree with zoos. I'm sorry.
Dude, 100% I don't either.
I make my
family upset all the time because we would go to Portland and we always wind up going to the Portland Zoo or something. And I just get bummed out, dude. Like the last time we went there, there was an elephant because it was cold out. It was in this little glass case until it hit the season where it warm up, and it was just like pacing around in a circle. And I remember it looked at me and it was so heartbreaking because you could tell it was intelligent and it just looked like it was like, help me.
Elephants are smart. They're an intelligent animal. And like, this is that kind of stuff where I'll be honest, even with the Carol Baskin and all that, you watch that happen. He's like, it's like the dude, the tiger guy. Why can't I think of his name?
I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. But the tiger guy, like, he was hitting these animals and stuff like that when they would bite him. And I'm thinking, and like,
feeding them expired meat.
Expired meat. Like, we don't know stuff. I didn't know. Did you know tigers' tongues are absolutely terrible for you? They have barbs on their tongue. So it's not.
I'm not surprised because my cats, you know, they have
those, the sandpaper bristles, tongue kind of thing. So it's, if you think about it, a large cat, this thing is, when it licks you, it is tearing skin off.
Yeah.
So these natural predators, so that's what I'm saying. Stop explaining this. And he says it in the movie. He tried to train a territorial predator.
Yeah, he says you can't tame a predator. You can only enter an agreement with it. But that's where he says the Siegfried and Roy thing,
which is why it comes in.
Yeah.
That's exact. He made a valid freaking point. And so one dude is like, here, he's going to eat this horse, everybody, and let us see the wonders of the world. And
he
it's like,
hasn't learned because he was exploited and the animals exploited.
Exactly.
And he survived that incident because he didn't exploit the animal, but he clearly didn't learn from that because he's processing his trauma all throughout his life, he's in turn exploiting this animal. And so that's going to be his undoing.
Right.
A reporter for TMZ on an electric motorcycle wears a reflective helmet and zooms out to the ranch. He is warned to turn back. He tries to get an interview with M, but when she refuses, he drives until the bike suddenly stops and wipes out. OJ tries to help him, but he's only concerned with filming it and is ultimately sucked up. Hulse gets the footage from Jean Jacket, but realizes that it's the magic hour and sets off on foot to get a good shot. He has also eaten. Do you know what the magic hour is?
I don't know what the magic hour is now.
So it's this time around twilight where it's just really, really beautiful for taking shots, and you get darkness and light. And there's just so many movies that I've watched where you look at the behind the scenes and they talk about all that stress of like, we have to get the magic hour shot. And it's like 12 minutes. That's it. They do all this setup and you get 12 minutes to get it. And if you don't get it, you can't get it till the next day. And you probably can't get it the next day because you have to move on.
Yeah.
So it's extremely stressful. And if you have an acting scene in there, then you have to nail it because you have 12 minutes, you know, like,
yeah, to get this part right.
He's not happy with getting the shot. He is now trying to get the perfect shot.
Yeah,
he's trying to get that ultimate spectacle, and he's not gonna get it.
Yeah, and
because
honestly,
he's gonna die. I guess he does get it because you see his foot as he's being sucked up into the thing, right? But
yeah, which,
and the camera gets broken later. We see parts of it.
It does,
out,
which then towards the end we find out what the perfect shot was actually because M gets it. The TMZ that spoke volume because that again another exploit of
absolutely
TMZ. I love TMZ. I watch it all the time. Like I'm a nosy person.
I don't.
Do I agree with
and gossip with celebrities sometimes?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, I won't say I love them because they do a little much, but TMZ, that guy being there, it showed exactly how reporters and stuff go where they're trying to demonstrate they're not getting their answer. So guess what? They're going to go to their next answer. And so his biggest thing was to drive out and be like, yeah, I'm going to go
Can't believe she doesn't want to give that interview either.
Exactly.
He's like, what, don't you want to be on TV? And by the way, up to this point, M probably would want to get on TV. Would want to,
but she's so terrified and everything else going on.
And she's also, this is the evolution of her character, is like getting past the spectacle. She has gotten past the spectacle. She doesn't want the spectacle anymore because she's learned the spectacle is dangerous.
M is social media. She, like in the beginning, you can tell like she is talking to these producers and saying all these things because she's doing it. She knows what she's talking about versus the character who her brother is. He is not. And like you said, he is not that social guy that wants to go out and do all these things. But like that movie, in that way, these parts, it takes a lot, you know? And again, they exploit TMZ. I mean, not even just TMZ, reporters alone. They're not going to take no for an answer.
I should also say it fits in with the exploitation narrative in that if you look back, I believe in old Hollywood's like in the 50s, they would sell their stars in magazines and up on the big screen. And then at a certain point, they started to realize like, well, they get in all sorts of trouble and people are interested in their lives. So then they would also bankroll the thing that like was dishing all the nasty secrets about the stars on top of it. They were exploiting the crap out of their own people. And TMZ is the outcropping of that now. Like that's how it looks.
TMZ. They hit on that kind of stuff. Well, and
I would say like in the 90s, in the 80s, when I was a kid, it was like National Enquirer was what filled that void.
And now
Entertainment Weekly a little bit.
You can bust your phone out and now you're a reporter. I'm serious. Yep. That's basically what it is.
And then guess who picks up that footage from YouTube?
TMZ.
Yeah. It's like, if they can't get it themselves, they're like, we're going to do it
some other way.
Angel is attacked but manages to escape while wrapped in a tarp and barbed wire. Jean Jacket changes its form and heads for M, who gets on the bike, which does not work. OJ looks at it, causing the creature to switch directions. M rides to Jupe's theme park as it switches directions and follows her.
It looks like a spaceship. All of a sudden, it becomes this massive mass of what looks like sails. I was thinking party streamers.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I thought party streamers is because it's inviting and it's like, you know, and the way.
Spectacle, it, yeah. Baby, it's the spectacle.
Yeah, it's the spectacle. But the way it like opens its mouth and you realize how it is. Now, the thing is this thing is scary. I'll be honest. The way he made it sound where, again, he's like, this is what it's like to be digested. And he says that. This thing isn't just taking them up. You would think that when it sucks them up, they're going to be probed and tested and all these other things.
But as a metaphor for exploitation, it's showing the pain you go through when you're up top, when you've risen to the top.
Exactly.
Like, nope, now we're just going to bat you around and have our way with you.
Eat you alive. And I think he is definitely breaking down the aspects of Hollywood. And to be honest, people, like, I could never be famous. Like, I'm not saying like I just couldn't do it. Thinking about it and like depression and stuff I go through, there's no way I could sit here and read a comment and be like, oh yeah, that's great. You know what I mean?
I have this weird part of me that really wants it, but then I have another part of me that occasionally thinks about what that entails and I'm frightened by it.
I mean,
it doesn't mean that I don't still want it. It's crazy.
It's weird.
Dude. It's
and
so
paparazzi
crazy.
Scares
I'm wired
you.
Like this. Exactly. And I think a lot of people are wired like that, you know?
I'm wired like that, you know? Like, I want to know, but I don't want to know.
I'll be honest, man. I was on a reality show. Very, very briefly.
Really?
Yes. So it was this. If anybody wants to look up the YouTube clip, you can find it. And I'll tell you in a second how to find it. And I'm embarrassed to even bring it up. But there was this reality show called Frontier Force. And they were following around cops, basically. And it was Nat Geo. And they do Special Olympics fundraiser. And I was with the Special Olympics. I was coaching for them. And so I told my athletes, if you can raise this amount of money, then like I will do the passion plunge where we jump into this icy water. And they raised like 5 times the amount that I said, and they did the amount I said in the first week. Like, they killed it. So I was like, I want to make this memorable for them. And like, I'm overweight. I was more overweight at the time.
Yeah.
And so I went wearing nothing but an adult diaper and like these little tiny fairy wings and like a fake little bow and arrow to dress like Cupid because we did it on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So I go out to this thing and I know when I'm stepping out, like I know that there's going to be reporters and stuff there. And there is this little part of me that's like, I'll probably get in the newspaper and it'll be funny.
Yeah.
And I don't care. But then I get filmed and I signed a release for Nat Geo, not knowing what it was for. And then somebody later on an episode called Marijuana Factory was like, why am I seeing you on national TV right now? And I was like, what? So I cut this clip that's like Fat Cupid jumps in icy water or something. If you want to see me,
oh my
gosh, from 10 years ago. But I was a part of that too. And what's crazy about it is like, I thought it would be funny and it was for a while, but now I'm like embarrassed by it.
Oh, shit.
Because like I did something degrading to myself because I thought it would be funny. And far as I thought it out was like, I'm going to be a newspaper write-ups, which I was.
Right.
And like this dude laughs. He's like, we're not taking your photo. And I was like, no, I get
it. Yeah, please don't.
I was laughing, yeah. But I was the lead in for the article and they talked about me. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I was a part of the spectacle and I'm like embarrassed by it now. And I still tell the story because the story is funny, but like the reality of it is when I watch it, I feel kind of ashamed. And I had a friend who came back. He did it every year. And the 1 year he doesn't do it, came back and he's like, screw you, dude. The 1 year I don't do it, you like wind up on national TV. So he was jealous of that spectacle, even though I had to do this thing.
Yeah.
It all ties in with this movie. Like on some level,
it really does.
We're all doing this stuff.
Well, and if you think about it, well, one, sorry that happened, but it's also
no,
like
it's 100% self-inflicted, dude.
But if you think about it, it is one of those things. Like I had to think about it and like, if people are like, oh my God, we'll laugh about this later. And really, if you think about it, kind of could be the opposite too. You know, I mean, we could be laughing about it now and then later on, it could be something that embarrassed the shit out of this person.
Yeah.
And
I put the party hat on.
Yes.
Willingly.
Oh my gosh.
And
oh,
then
I better not say this on
it.
There. You can cut this out, but you were the monkey in that.
No, totally. No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Like this is all metaphors for like what we do for the spectacle.
Exactly.
And how it damages you later. Now, am I deeply damaged by it? No, it's just kind of embarrassing.
It's
but
embarrassing.
Then I think about like, how many times has Jordan Peele done a Mad TV sketch or whatever where he's like genuinely embarrassed by it?
I mean, if we really look at it, the Stewie character, I could never, like wearing a diaper and wearing like being pale white with this freaking, trying to think of the haircut.
I hated that character.
This omen. Yes, yeah, Stewie. I'm not a, no. But I'll do his little comment, his little things. Did I find it entertaining? Whatever. But like to do all of that and then like he has to go back and look at it now and like seeing him in other roles, it's hard because you see him as Stewie.
Yeah.
Stewart. You see
and
him as
probably
that
what
character.
People say when they see him on the street.
Stewie. You know, and really,
Stewie?
Right. And really throughout the whole time, he's done these other great roles. And so like, I could see that with yours as well. It's like, you've done all these other things, but then when you look back, you kind of have this thing that's like,
well, and this is the crazy thing. I guarantee nobody even remembered that this happened. Even people
they
I
will,
know.
They will
but
now.
But I just brought it up.
They will now.
Now
you
it's
know?
On the radio station. I'm helping run.
Everybody.
What am I thinking?
Yeah. That is on you, man.
I'm
you
jupe,
can cut this
dude.
Out.
I'm
but
jupe right now.
We're all going to know it's there.
Oh, no, no. I'm keeping it.
Do it.
M releases a large helium balloon that was shaped like Jupe. The eyes draw Jean Jacket in and it devours it. M manages to take a picture of Jean Jacket from a giant well right below the balloon as it pops and the creature goes down. She gathers herself and sees OJ on horseback in the distance. Dude, somehow I did not process that he survived this and I read something about that and I was like, what? And I went back and I was like, oh, I had thought it was like an image of like a Western kind of thing and hadn't really thought it out. And then it was like, oh no, it was literally him.
Yeah.
I feel so dumb, dude.
Oh,
sometimes
no.
I watch stuff and I just, I was like, wait, OJ didn't survive. Oh, he did survive.
Well, because really when she drives off, I don't think they show OJ after that.
She gets the picture.
Mm-hmm.
She lays, walks away and she looks like she's really ground. Damaged and stuff. And
right.
then she like, she gives this look and it starts to become wonderment. And then you see, I don't even know what you call that, but that frame and it says Beyond Yonder on the frame. And then there's like kind of smoky because the creature crashed and it's kicked up all this dust. And then through the dust, you slowly see OJ on horseback.
You do.
By the way, with the horse Lucky, who's survived survives over and over again. So I'm sure not a coincidence.
Which, because, well, I was wondering.
Lucky's had a lot of brush ups.
There
with
was
that
a
alien.
Horse death scene in there, wasn't there?
But it's not Lucky.
It wasn't Lucky.
Yeah, Lucky gets struck by a key at the beginning. Lucky winds up being sold to Jupe and then is put in the plastic thing, and Lucky doesn't die there.
That's
and then,
right.
like, Lucky is in the horse trailer and makes it back. And then, like, Lucky is ridden by OJ and still doesn't die, and neither does OJ.
There's
so
a scene,
Lucky is lucky.
There's a scene on there, though, right, where he is riding on a horse, OJ is, and then he gets off of it, and that thing takes the horse, right? And you can hear it in the background, and then it eats it, right?
Man, I thought, but it was probably just something else being chewed up inside it.
I'm telling you, there's
a... I think
a,
it's like either that or well, she's you, having a you, vision of him.
You go pretty good. No, I thought there was a part where he's riding on the horse. I always thought it was the part
I was
where
sure he's dead, but they don't show him die, so he must have survived. Or it's just a vision of like...
Well, wasn't... Yeah, and it wasn't Lucky. I just thought there was a chase scene. And I could be wrong. I think I might know what part it is. But I thought there was a chase scene, and like OJ notices the thing, and then he jumps off, and the horse is running in the background, and then the thing swoops it up and flies off.
It's not Lucky, though. It's a different horse.
It was a different horse, but that scene is a scene, right?
Because by the time the horse gets swept up, Lucky is already with Jupe, because he got sold at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
He was lucky enough to get sold.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny that the horse is just hanging out in the clear like thing. It's just hanging out. It's like, yeah, everybody else is gone, not me.
So we should talk about how this movie is about spectacle. And so Jordan Peele made a really big deal out of his cinematographer, Hoyt Van Hoytema, who he hired for this and hired him to do this. You know, it was like a big IMAX movie. Mm-hmm. I saw it on an XD screen here, which is not the same. It's not as good as IMAX, but it still looks pretty good. He's a cinematographer that broke out after filming the original Let the Right One In. And now he's Nolan's guy. So like recently he did Oppenheimer, you know, which is like this giant movie that's still on IMAX screens as we're recording this.
Yeah.
Peele kept talking about this breakthrough he did, and I was trying to figure out what it was. So he filmed nighttime using a camera for infrared light with a narrow bandwidth and a camera that was IMAX's 70 millimeter film, and then overlaid the image to recreate the feel of eyes that adjusted to the dark whenever they're in the nighttime. So that was what Peele wanted, is he wanted it to feel like there's not some light source out there that's like lighting up the things and making it kind of fake and dark scenes. Because he had so many dark scenes, he wanted it to feel like what it would feel like if you're
which
out in
the
night.
He does a really good job at doing that. So it's really refreshing.
Peele posted an intro for the show Gordy's Home right before Nope came out. So he like filmed this thing, that TV show where the ape goes crazy.
Gotcha.
It takes place in Cape Canaveral, which is where the Challenger explodes. The ape is wearing a Challenger shirt at one point, and then the father, you know, who the ape will beat down later, he comes in and the ape scares him and he's dressed like a building and then falls down. And I'm just like, wow, dude, there's all these like little hints as to what's going to happen.
And not
with
him
that.
Hitting the King Kong.
No. I do think it's the Empire State Building that he's like dressed as. So
interesting.
So it'll be the downfall of the ape, right? It's crazy, dude. Another crazy thing that they did with social media, and they explain this in the special features, and I'm like, why are they getting so into this? So apparently they also did this as a viral website without explaining what it was leading into before Nope came out. And I tried to go to the site, and now it's just literally to sell you copies of the Blu-ray for Nope. When you went into the site before, it was showing Jupe's Western Land thing. And so it shows how these kids go in, and right when they show up to the theme park, they have to dig to get this gold.
Yeah.
And then they turn in the gold for Jupe coins, which they can use to like buy things around the amusement park.
Oh my gosh. That is crazy.
You had to work to get these things to like spend the money, which you will use up.
Yeah.
And then you may not even have enough to do the things that you want. It's his psychology playing out in this, and it's all there in the movie, but it's not explicitly laid out. But if you're looking at the locations, they're there. And then they recreated the set at Universal Studios right when the movie came out. So like you can walk through it and get that experience.
That's awesome and crazy. See, and that's what I'm saying. Jordan Peele has a good way of turning these movies and stuff into something different. And I'm like, I'm here for it. The way that thing dies, by the way, it looked like it just dissipates. Are they going to get their answer? But I didn't realize.
So somebody from Universal said he doesn't think that story is over with yet.
Yes.
And Peele hasn't said anything about it. So I don't know if Peele's actually thinking about doing a sequel or not, but we might potentially get a sequel. I have doubts on it.
I would actually, but maybe I'd be down for a sequel for this movie, mostly because I want to. I'm nosy. I want to know what happened, what happened picture. I didn't realize that the thing had went through the whole town and ate everybody. So it was like, you know, or what are they going to discover? And this is, again, kind of like the Get Out thing. What is going to happen? Are they going to think that these people took all these people out? Is it going to be this? Are they going to do jail time? Like, are they going to find the thing and then realize there might be more? And then that does leave it out to, because this thing had a way of hiding itself. That's the cuttlefish effect, by the way. It had a way of camouflaging. And so definitely put out there that there are more out there, but this thing in the movie isn't really smart. Even when it eats.
I think it kind of is.
It though. Is, but it isn't. It knows what and what not to eat. But like, as far as like it being like organically.
It also recognizes people.
It recognizes people, but then it eats that balloon. And so I'm like, was this thing.
Well, I mean, it can be smart and not know everything. You
exactly.
know?
And that's where I was like, this thing, well, that makes sense, actually. Yeah, it could be smart and not know everything.
But I will say, you know where I fall on the sequel thing with Jordan Peele? I don't want him to ever make a sequel. I'll follow him wherever he goes.
Right.
But there's just almost no auteur directors of his stature at this point who are making original movies. And so I just like, I want to hold on to that and just not have Peele be the guy who makes part 2, 3, 4, 5. Like we talked on the porch after Get Out where I was saying I was super happy with the Universal deal that Peele had made, which I think expires next year. So I hope he gets one more movie of his movies out because he's done some for Monkey's
Paw.
Yeah,
let it be enough.
But
Jordan
basically
Peele,
from
this.
2019 to 2024, everything he makes is for Universal. It's like a exclusive thing for Universal. Mm-hmm. And I was happy to see him get the bag in that way. I don't want him to like reach out and be like, now I'm going to make my franchise. Like, I have no doubt he would make a great franchise. I just like that's so much of filmmaking anymore. I just want him to make original things. I love what he does.
Well, if he does it, like, don't do what most people do. Like, if you're going to do sequels and stuff like that, you got to make it a damn good sequel. You can't, you know, I love it because we make great movies and we love it. I can see if it's like, okay, we didn't understand the first one. We really didn't like it. And then the second one being phenomenal. But like, don't ruin the first one by making a second one and making the second one absolute trash.
And it's so rare that a sequel is better than the original. I mean, it happens on occasion, but it's really rare.
I mean, the Hangover.
The only two that pop out in my head that were better than the original.
Yeah.
Bride of Frankenstein. Better than Frankenstein. Like, Bride of Frankenstein is amazing. And Godfather Part 2, I think is better than Godfather, but people will debate that. So even that's murky. But like most of the time, it's just diminishing returns.
And if you think about it, you're talking about old school movies even. It seems like they haven't had original thoughts at all. The best thing that we've seen lately for people to do is to redo something or make it a part two. I mean, we've done, I swear to everything, y'all, if they remake a Big Trouble Little China, I'm going to be really upset.
They've been circling it with
I hope
Rock
they
Johnson
don't.
Forever.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I really hope they don't. I think that needs
you
to be a
cult
classic.
Who will absolutely let them? John Carpenter, because he always says this thing in Comic-Cons and stuff when he goes to speak, and he always says, you know what's really amazing about when they make another Halloween movie is I read in the trades that they're making a Halloween movie.
Yeah.
And then I reach out my palm and it's filled with money.
Yeah. Yeah,
he has nothing to do with it, and he just sits,
he
there,
just
and
sits
collects
there and makes
checks,
that money.
You know?
And like, that's the best part about it. But like, I mean, they even did Hocus Pocus 2, where my friend literally goes, yeah, the best part about it was the ending. I'm like, yeah, I saw that on YouTube. And she goes, yeah, that was the best part. You didn't miss anything else. Stop making these movies. If you're going to second part it, make it freaking great. Make it be a part of the story. Don't take characters out.
Hollywood wants to make a franchise. They don't want to make an individual movie. They're not even giving you a complete story anymore because they're trying to net you in for the sequel. Because the idea is you keep them coming. It's not like you watch this and you're super satisfied.
Right.
It's like you're satisfied enough so that you'll go again. And it makes the movies worse because instead of doing a singular vision and making sure that the movie works on every level, they're just like, how can I spin out like five of these?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I just saw it and I didn't realize it until I watched it with my mom. Wakanda Forever, the Black Panther, that character went out and they took it apart. It was such a great part for women and Black people that it came together and made it a strong Black female role for most of it. And they did really good at covering how he passed away.
I thought strong. So too. Like they got handed some lemons and they somehow made it work. But a lot of people didn't like it either. So I think we're the minority. I really liked it as well.
Yeah. I thought any movie you're going to do with Angela Bassett, I'm sorry, it's going to be a strong movie. Not all the time. That could be just a strong character. Angela Bassett is a strong role. But watching it and Namor is, there's so much behind it.
I think that works too because another great filmmaker who's been coming up lately is Ryan Coogler. Mm-hmm. And so have you ever seen Fruitvale Station?
I haven't.
We might have to cover that someday. It's incredible. And so I don't want to tip too much about what it is. But then he immediately gets sucked into the machine. So he makes Creed, which is great, but it's kind of a reboot and kind of a part seven.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like to the Rocky franchise. And then he's in the Marvel movies, which like Black Panther is great. And I don't want to take anything away from it. But it's like I keep thinking about Fruitvale Station. I'm like, really wish Ryan Coogler would make those movies too, though, because they have something to say.
Right.
That's like really important. And I mean, you want the big spectacles to have something to say. So like, I understand, but it's also like we're taking away our auteurs and putting them through this machine.
Exactly.
And taking away their soul a little bit, which I think ties in with what Nope is about. You know?
I agree. I definitely
like it's part of that machine bringing you up, sucking you in and then like chewing you up and spitting you out.
And that actually explains it a lot. I mean, the cool thing that he did with this, again, it was like four or five, it might have been three or four animals that he just took apart and made it scary. You get to see the inside of this thing, and
that's really cool too.
Yeah,
when you see him in the tube.
He was like, I want you to know. And really, I guess I won't say want you to know what it's like to be digested, but really, he's saying, I want you to know what it's like to have your hopes and dreams sucked up right from you and spit out like it was nothing. And really, that's what it is these people are getting ate and you're like, oh my God, it's an alien and all these things. And really, there's so much behind it because it's like, oh my gosh, that's right. Like you are being chewed up and just spit out. This thing is just an eater and a pooper. But intelligently, this guy who is trying to turn it into something, Siegfried and Roy, backfires on them. And I really loved that about the whole thing is that it made a statement of this is what happens when you get into filming and movies. And I don't even know if that's just for actors. I think that's for producers and everything.
I think it's all aspects of the spectacle,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's even like showing up on the news to talk about your neighbor who snapped and shot somebody.
Exactly.
It's just every aspect of it. That's why I share my story is like, does that have anything to do with Hollywood? Not really. Does it totally relate to what we're talking about? It does, because in every aspect, we're drawn to the spectacle that's not good for us.
Agreed.
If you see that accident on the side of the road, you're probably going to look. Last night, I was having a cigarette while I was finishing up my notes, and I stepped out and there was a fire truck and an ambulance and those sirens were going, and I had smoked another cigarette and another cigarette waiting to see it pass by because I wasn't sure if it was a fire truck, an ambulance. I thought maybe it was cops. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I felt like I had to see it. And then as the ambulance drove by, I just caught this little glimpse of the dude on the gurney and immediately regretted like hanging out. And it was like, why did I have to see that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's saying like we're all human. Of New York, number one original. Wake up, pop culture up by dying on the job. And I kinda like to be the one to tell you. Girl, you've been out to me. Oh yeah.
Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small and Xavi Cousins. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivret. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.